Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is our 302nd broadcast of the EAL radio show. Our broadcast started back in January 2011, and now we're on our 7th year. Wow, boy, what a run. We're truly the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. My name is Chuck Albright. I'm standing in for Jim Hart tonight. I'm one of the hosts that brings you this show every Monday all through the year. Just a reminder about how to sign into the show on call in. If you have comments or join our host here, and all you need to do is go to www.ealradioshow.com and look for the radio icon on the home page. Click the arrow in the circle at 7 p.m. and you can listen on your computer. You can also tune in by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. This site is the site of our provider, Blog Talk Radio. Now here's an easier way. Just call 213-816-1611 at 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And you can listen in right on your phone. You can also join in the conversation by saying, "Hi, we want to hear from you. Now let's get this episode in the air with a new Eastern airplane."
Flight attendants, prepare for departure, please. Captain, we have completed the cabin departure announcements and we're secure for departure.
Thank you, Dorothy. Don, will you let Philadelphia Tower know we're ready for takeoff?
Sure, Captain. Philadelphia Tower, Eastern 320 Heavy, is ready for takeoff.
Roger, Eastern 302 Heavy. Is that a new aircraft you guys are flying? We've been admiring the beautiful lines of your aircraft. It's the first time we've seen one of these new Airbus A300 aircraft in Philadelphia.
Yeah, we wondered if you guys would notice our newest in the fleet. It's the Airbus A300-B4. We're the first airline in the United States to take delivery of the European-built aircraft. First kind to be purchased by an American carrier. We received the first delivery just this past week on August 24th of 77. The engines are two General Electric CFG-50C engines. They deliver about 51,000 pounds of thrust each. That's a total of 102,000 pounds of thrust. We got all seats filled today, 252. We probably maxed weight out at about 330,000 pounds. Our flight speed today is going to be to Miami. It will be about 560 miles an hour.
Okay, very good. Nice information about the aircraft, and we hope to see you guys in here more often. Right now, your winds are from 060 degrees at 10 knots, and you're cleared for takeoff on runway 9 right.
Roger, Philly. Eastern 302 Heavy. Confirm runway 9 right, and we're on the roll.
If you've flown long enough as a crew member, over the course of a crew member's career, I'm sure you've heard sounds of violent weather while en route. We're at cruise altitude now and just entered ominous clouds at altitude when we hear the following.
Take you through some of the aircraft tests that the manufacturers have to demonstrate before it receives its airworthy certificate. Skilled pilots spend hours in the sky and on the runway putting planes through a whole range of jaw-dropping tests. Planes are also put through their paces in high and low temperatures, snow, wind, and rain. It's simple to take sure engines and material control works correctly at all times. Aircraft are also flown high altitudes and then on low to the ground. Planes are flown and taxied in extreme weather conditions as part of their comprehensive test programs. Airbus demonstrated weather testing to the extreme by flying continuously at Alquit, Canada. Temperatures reached an extremely frigid minus 28 degrees Celsius. That's minus 18 degrees Fahrenheit. The scope of the trial included engine start after a cold soak, verifying system behavior, low-speed taxiing, reject takeoffs, also performed in a local flight as planned. Don?
Yeah, fatigue testing. This is an incredible test that sees the plane placed in what looks like a construction site. And pressure and strain exerted on every aspect of the body. Fatigue testing engines, how the aircraft structure responds to stress over a long period of time and during different stages of its operations, such as taxiing on the runway, takeoff, and cruising and landing. To recreate these conditions, a combination of loads are placed on the airframe, to activate by computer-operated hydraulic jacks. The wings are usually bent to 90 degrees. This helped the manufacturers a durability of material and life expectancy. This plane is stressed, bent, pressurized to reenact the demands of air travel. I don't know if they're talking about me or the airplane. Chip?
Next is the water ingestion test, which is not what my dad had in mind with Eastern 855.
No.
Oh, man.
But this test validates how the aircraft would behave on a very rain-soaked runway and verifies that neither the water under the aircraft nor the spray generated by the nose landing gear will enter the engines. Planes land on runways filled with lots of water to ensure controls, materials, and brakes work correctly. A water trough is created on the runway surface with rubber strips inserted in the grooves to retain the water. The pool will often be 350 feet long and 100 feet wide. And the aircraft performs several runs on this risky test. A water trough is created by applying to the runway surface grooves and rubber strips inserted in the grooves to retain the water.
The bird strike test, which is a chicken gun, is a large diameter compressed air cannon used to test the strength of aircraft windshields and the safety of jet engines. Bird collisions are a common danger to aircraft, so they must be strong enough to resist them. Author Simon Winchester wrote in his book, Leviathans of the Sky, a gun was built that would fire 8 thawed 24-ounce chickens at the jet engine blades in less than a second, a simulation of a bird strike. Planes are built to withstand a bird strike, but damage is still done to the body. Jet engines may sustain serious damage, however, and cockpit windows are necessarily made of transparent, thin materials and are a vulnerable spot. The chicken gun is designed to simulate high-speed bird impacts. It is named after its unusual ammunition, a whole dead standard-sized chicken, the same kind that would be used for cooking. This has been found to accurately simulate a large live bird in flight. Patrick Smith, author of Cockpit Confidential, said, "You can see web videos of bird carcasses being fired from a sort of chicken cannon to test the resistance of windshields, intakes, and so forth."
Lightning test. Although it may sound horrifying prospect, commercial aircraft around the world are bombarded with bolts of lightning every single day. According to experts, in an average year, any given airline can expect to be struck at least once on its travel. Indeed, as the fuselage of most airplanes is made of conductive aluminum, they present in snow and storm clouds, there are huge amounts of static electricity gather can actually trigger the discharge. Lightning strike was filmed by a passenger on a Korean airplane, but testing on planes ensure damage is kept to a minimum. But due to strict regulations, all passenger planes must be built with an electrical shielding which protects the inside of the plane from the affected lightning bolts. The BBC reported how Airbus carries out lightning strike tests on material that is used to build planes at a warehouse in Wales. In the lightning lab, the scientists fired bolts of electricity at the material used to construct the body of the aircraft, but placed the carbon fiber in layers of metal that reduce the damage and is known as lightning protection. Don?
Rejected takeoff wet test. The rejected takeoff test, which is called RTO, is one of the hardest tests an airplane has to undergo before it can be certified. The RTO test is performed under the worst possible conditions. For example, with fully worn brakes, the plane loaded to maximum takeoff weight, and use of thrust reversers are banded. The rejection takeoff test is performed under the worst possible conditions. For example, with fully worn outbreaks. During the RTO test, most of the kinetic energy of the airplane is converted to heat to the brakes, which may cause a fusible type plugs to melt. And then these types of valves will deflate the tires. Small brake fires are acceptable as long as they do not spread to the body of the aircraft within 5 minutes. That's the maximum time, usually at most airports, where the firefighters can get to the aircraft. And I'm tired. I've been through hell tonight.
Yep.
Next is dragging the tail on the runway. This test is called the velocity minimum unstick test. It allows the pilot to determine the minimum aircraft speed required for takeoff in various configurations. Essentially, the plane travels at a lower than expected speed along the runway so that the plane's tail scrapes on the tarmac. Dragging the tail on the runway allows the pilot to determine the minimum aircraft speed required for takeoff in these various configurations. It's a difficult maneuver for the pilots to perform. In a video posted on Boeing's YouTube channel, Captain Mark Feuerstein, excuse my pronunciation, who is a 747 test pilot, said that it's a balance between being forceful and gentle. But, of course, we want to be very gentle when we set the airplane's tail down on the runway. The plane travels at a lower-than-expected speed along the runway so that that plane's tail scrapes on the tarmac.
Stall testing. The slower an airplane goes, the more angle of attack it needs to produce lift equal to the aircraft's weight. As the speed slows further, at some point, this angle will be equal to the critical stall angle of attack. One of the more terrifying tests the plane will have to go through is a mid-air stall test. Speaking to AOL Travel, Frank Santoni, chief pilot of commercial planes for Boeing Test and Evaluation, said, "You actually slow the airplane down in flight, so slow that the wing stops flying, and that's called a stall, where you don't have enough air in the wing to produce lift, and then the airplane will cease flying. If you do this with the wing clean, with the flaps up and in cruise position, you get a lot of natural buffet on the wind so that the airplane shakes pretty dramatically, and that lets the pilot know you're stalling and shouldn't be there."
Extreme weather testing. Planes don't always have the luxury of waiting for optimal landing conditions. Sometimes the snow doesn't quit, or the rain doesn't let up, or the wind stops blowing. It's important to know how bad is so bad that you need to go through all the trouble to reroute the flight. The only way to find out is testing. Here's what rainy landing testing is all about. For this test, Boeing glued a bunch of foam barriers to a runway in Glasgow, Montana, to create an impromptu wading pool containing some 3,000 gallons of water. Then, a 737, Boeing 737 MAX, sped through it at close to takeoff speeds while a nearby drone watched with a close photographic eye to make sure that the landing gear's splash patterns didn't throw water into crucial openings that could affect engine performance or mess up the auxiliary power unit, otherwise known as the APU. The result is a big splash for a plane that's actually relatively small, much smaller than the 787 Dreamliner or giants like the 777 or the Airbus A380, which have nearly twice the wingspan and more than twice the wingspan, respectively. Well, that's just a few of the tests that I found. Again, researching the Internet, you can find almost anything that you want to talk about. And tonight, our discussion was the airplanes that we as flight crew members and passengers put our bodies in, and hopefully take off at one point and land at the other. Sometimes we have an occasional extra little grasp on the armrest, perhaps, when we go through some violent weather. I always thought to myself that as a pass rider, I always thought that when I was, and of course, pass riding, you sometimes encounter some severe weather, especially the turbulence part of it, where those wings, it's very satisfying to know they've been tested to almost, well, to the breaking point, both negative and positive G's that are forced on those wings. You know, I read a book a long time ago about Mr. I believe it was Mr. Martin Aircraft that originally designed airplanes and how he would test the wings, the load factor put on wings, and he would actually would get out on the wing, and he would jump up and down on that wing until I guess it broke. But that was interesting reading. But I guess in the old days, that's the only way that they could test the loads that they thought would be placed on wings. But airplanes do go through quite a bit of testing, and it's reassuring to pilots that know these tests occur from the manufacturer, and we feel very comfortable about flying these aircraft because this is the best place to be when you take a flight, is in the cockpit, as far as I'm concerned, because I know that what's ahead of the airplane and what the airplane is going to have to be subjected to. And I made some notes on this. I don't know whether you guys did or not, but is anything anyone want to talk about among the tests that we just talked about, or maybe we left off a test or two? So
hey,
now's the time, because I've got some notes myself. Go ahead, Don.
I was just remembering something. I remember working a ramp back in the early 60s, and I noticed that the nose wheel tires had that flange on them on the side, like where a white wall would be on a car or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was to push the water away from the engines in the back.
Okay.
So that they wouldn't ingest all that water.
Don, I'm going to ask
yes.
a question of our pilots that are with us tonight. I've got Chip Thompson, who's with American Airlines, a captain, and the son of Steve Thompson, Captain Steve Thompson of Eastern, who is soloing his son, I guess, on the radio show. But at any rate, Chip, it's so nice to have you here with us. You've been on with us before, and we're glad to have you back, and we hope your dad gets well very soon. And but
thank you.
I forgot what I was going to ask you. My tongue got wrapped up. I was going to ask the question of what is that tire that Don spoke of called? Now, George Jen, I know you know it. you better know it. What's the name of that tire that Don just described, that nose wheel tire?
On the 727.
Exactly. What's the name of that tire? There's a name for it.
I guess it's on a DC-9, too.
I don't know. I just knew it. I knew it as a nose wheel tire at all.
How about?
That's not a good job, that, you know. Sometimes, but sometimes, like she's been sick and gone, and
yeah, I know she doesn't want to. I know she doesn't want to do something.
Boy, I will. I wanted to listen in on that conversation, but I think it's. Wait a minute. Go ahead, Chuck. Do you know the answer?
It's called a chine.
Okay. Thank goodness. All right. It takes a mechanic.
A chine.
I thought the chine was like the little plastic, or I guess it's some type of other material that goes over the nose wheel tire.
No.
Over the nose wheel tire.
I think there's one between
the nose wheel tire. A little.
Yeah, no, I mean to divert the water away.
No, the if you remember, the 727 had that little flange that was built out from the sidewalls of the
right.
Yeah.
I've been up
do you remember that,
personal,
Chip?
Those,
did, you,
yeah.
did you fly the 7? You might not have flown the 727, Chip.
Yes, I did. I flew it in the right seat and was an engineer on it. And I was just about to cheat and get on Google to see if I could find the name of that tire. I'm like somebody already spoke. It was just a nose wheel tire to me.
Yeah, nose wheel tire. You're right.
You have to change enough tires to know that.
Yeah,
sure.
There you go. Dorothy, you were talking about in your talk about stall testing, and you're absolutely right. You described very nicely in that presentation about how the when the airplane slows down and the angle of attack is increased and the burbling effect on top of the wing destroys the pressure on top of the wing and the airplane stalls because of the aircraft's weight and blah, blah, blah. But one of the things that we used to do when we back in, and Steve remembers this well, back in the 60s when we checked out on the Boeing 727, we used to do all of our checkouts. We didn't have the luxury of a simulator, and we enjoyed flying the airplane and actually putting the airplane through the paces that the simulator that later on we had to demonstrate in the simulator. But we actually brought the airplane angle of attack, the nose high enough so that the wind that now flowing across the top of the wing was spoiled. And before the aircraft actually stalled, I think it was about 10, maybe 15 knots above stall speed, we had a stick shaker that actually shook the yoke of the pilot's yoke, and that simulated what the pilot would normally feel when the airplane stalled. And we recovered, of course, positively by adding power and lowering the nose and that type of thing. So, the manufacturers test it to the very speed. And, of course, the speed is related to the altitude and also the weight of the aircraft as to which speed the airplane would stall. So it was very interesting that we did it not in the simulator, but actually in the airplane, which was a lot more fun.
Neil, I think the new students don't stall a real airplane. It's only done in a simulator.
Yeah, it is that done that way now. I think, isn't it, Chip? Chip, you don't do any type of actual aerial demonstrations, do you, on your check rides?
No, it's all done in the simulator, and it's all approach to stall. We don't even actually get the simulator to get the stick shaker going.
Was I close on the stick shaker speed to simulate a stall 10 to 15 knots above stall speed?
Yes. Yep.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
That's about right.
Yeah. Very interesting. The other thing that, Chip, you said in your talking about dragging the tail on the runway, and your dad would know this gentleman very well because he did one with an L-1011, and he actually used to flare the airplane. He flew the Slim Coxway. And
well, I remember Slim Cox.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
If Slim said that this is the way the airplane flies, by golly, to hell with Boeing or Douglas or whoever built the airplane, Lockheed or whoever. This is the way it's supposed to be flown by Slim. And, of course, we all remember, I think some of us remember, the episode down on the 1011 when he actually flared the airplane and flared it just like a Piper Cub, thinking there's a tail wheel back there. And there wasn't. Of course, there's a tail skid back there. And,
yes, there is.
That tail skid was pushed back up into the fuselage, the aft fuselage of the airplane, and it cost Eastern a lot of money to put that airplane back into airworthiness condition.
You know, one of my jobs as a mechanic on the L-1011, the shoe is removable, and they tell you when you go around the airplane to check that shoe, and if it shows wear, you're supposed to change it. But it's designed to be scraped on as the plane rotates.
Do you remember on the 727, George and Chip, that we had safety wire back there on that tail skid? Is that do you remember that?
Yep.
And that's what we looked for.
Previously hit it. Yeah.
And on the 767, it's just it's painted. I don't do walk-arounds anymore, so forgive me. red, I believe. So it's easy to see if it's been scuffed. On a side note, two trips ago, I had a co-pilot who had been off the property for quite some time. He was had been furloughed, and so he finished up his military career. And it's quite common these days to have these guys come back. And they're almost like a brand new hire. And we're 76300, and we're rolling down the runway. And I always keep my left thumb on my left knee, right at the yoke, as the co-pilot's flying when he rotates. And it saved us a tail skid because he pulled back on that thing. He flew C-130s in the Air National Guard for a long time, so maybe he was expecting that pressure, and I was really first times I've had to prevent a tail skid from doing that. And so when the other pilot came up after his break, he said, "Man, I swear I think we hit the tail skid." And I said, "No." I said, "You'd know it right away." And he said, "How?" I said, "Because you're going to get a call from the flight attendants in the back because they're going to feel it."
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Chip, that guy may have gone through the Slimcock school of flare and rotation.
Yeah, I never met Slim, but yeah. Sounds
you
like
it. Tell you a story about him.
Oh, we could do a whole show about Slim.
Yeah. Hey, Neil, do you remember ever flying, or did you know anybody that flew DC-4?
Well, I had flown the DC-4 in Hawaii. Yeah, go ahead.
We used to, on the ramp, we used to have to, when the airplane pulled in, they left the 1 and 2 running to hold the tail up until we put a tail stand underneath.
Right, yeah.
Had to be in there, or it would have fallen down.
Well, the reason I remember I didn't fly on scheduled operations, we had two DC-4s that were converted, and they were called Carvairs in Hawaii. Yeah. And that was with the big, huge nose that actually was hinged so that they could unhinge it there and move it over so cars could be loaded in the DC-4. And that was Freddie Laker's conversion of the DC-4. We had two of those. So I did get the chance to fly that airplane, and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed was the brake testing of the aircraft manufacturer testing brakes. And I don't know whether you guys have seen it or not, but it's really interesting. If you would go to the Internet and just type in your browser 747, whatever the last one, 800, 900, or whatever the series is now, the last ones that they flew, the 747 cargo aircraft that was up to about 900,000 pound max takeoff gross weight. And they demonstrated a reject takeoff. Has anyone seen that YouTube presentation of that?
Yeah, I've seen it. Isn't that the one where the thing, the tires deflate and it almost goes on fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they had 1 million pounds in there, I believe. It was up to about 1 million pounds they tested it with.
And that's all good. Pretty alarming.
Yeah. Yeah. And golly, Pete, you know, to try to stop something that big with that much energy moving forward and try to get it to stop before going off the runway. Something's got to give, and I guess the brakes. That was a good demonstration, and I've watched it a couple of times. But awesome braking of these aircraft they have. All the aircraft that I seem to have flown, I never had any problems with braking. Did any of you guys, Chip or George or Steve, you're sitting there besides Chip, but did you ever have any problems with the brake systems of the aircraft, Boeing or Airbus or Douglas?
No, I never did.
I never did either, and I'm going to turn around and ask Dad, and I don't know if any of you guys flew the A300 that's part of our show tonight, but I flew its follow-on. The American had the A300-600, which was a two-man crew. But I do notice that all the Airbus aircraft, the ones I jump seat on as well, the A320s, all have brake fans. And it's interesting, Boeing doesn't. But I just wondered if the Airbus you guys had brake fans.
I don't recall the Airbus having a brake fan. No, I flew that airplane for about 1,500 hours, I guess, and I don't recall it.
I flew it also. I think, didn't it have brake temperature gauges, though?
Yeah, brake temp gauges. Yeah, it sure did, yeah.
Yeah,
and you had to rest the airplane for a while if you exceeded. Was that the L-1011? I'm not sure which one now. All the airplanes are seeming to come together here.
I think that was the A300. The alternative was if you took off with them in a certain range, you're supposed to leave the gear down for 20 seconds or something
like
that.
That's right. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, in the air. That's right, cooling it.
How did you guys like landing on ice? Or very wet runways.
I can't give you an experience that I had landing on ice except in Des Moines, Iowa. I guess that would be the closest of landing on ice. And I was a brand new pilot on the 727, and I had a 200 series stretched, and it was a charter flight. We were empty. And yes, the runway was iced, and snow had just settled on top of the ice, and the tower told us that the runway was the taxiway. If we didn't make the taxiway, we'd have to turn around because the runway hadn't been plowed, that type of thing. And of course, we exceeded the turnoff for the taxiway, the only available taxiway to get off the runway. And the 727, without any passengers on it, we could do anything we wanted to. And I wanted to turn the airplane around so I could get back to the taxiway. But it's very difficult to turn an airplane on ice. I wasn't doing too good a job as a brand new captain. And the co-pilot told me, he said, I think I see some vegetation over here on the edge here that we're about to enter. I said, oh my God. And I said, I can't go any further. And so I said, to hell with it. And I reversed the engines, which we were not supposed to reverse the engines. And I reversed and blew a lot of snow on top of the airplane. As a matter of fact, I became invisible to the tower. They couldn't see us except all the snow flurry that was around the airplane. And I backed that airplane up, and it did a good job of doing it, and I taxied back to the taxiway very gently into that icy ramp and everything. And, you know, it always happens. Something like that always happens to a brand-new captain on a flight, and that was my my, I guess, initiation into flying captain. But
well, Neil, do you remember on the 727, initially there was a call out that the flight engineer made when you got to 80 knots and you were supposed to take the engines out of reverse at that point. You recall that? And then all of a sudden that was removed from the book when Eastern management decided to do power backs from the gate so that they didn't need the IAM push crews. You recall that?
Yeah, I recall that. We were the first airline to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
And it was the captain's option whether or not he wanted to do that. And a lot of the guys said, no, I'm not going to do it. And they had to hook up the tugs to the airplane like they used to do.
Well, let me ask Chip, what's American doing now with power backs?
Oh, we discontinued that a long, long time ago. It's funny hearing that story because I remember being a 7-2 co-pilot and we were powering back, and I told the captain that my dad was an Eastern captain, and he reminded me, I didn't even know it, he said, well, you know, Eastern was the first airline to do the power backs. And all the other airlines, and he was talking about American, obviously, were like, no, it's not safe and all this. And then, just like you alluded to, once the management for American and all these other airlines said, oh, we can save money without these push crews, well, then everyone was doing it. But no, we haven't had a pushback airplane in a long, long time.
You mean a power back?
I mean a power back. Yeah, I'm power sorry. Back. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you know, it. What struck me as interesting was that Eastern did have a couple of incidents on the ground where the airplane hit something or something hit the airplane. And it would seem to me that just the cost of one or two of those incidents would negate any possible labor cost savings that were, you know, realized by doing it. I thought it was crazy, you know.
Well, you got to balance it, George. You got to balance it also with the fact that even with tugs strapped to the airplane, those guys pushing the airplane back sometimes cause some damage as well, pushing them back into, you know, foreign objects, and because there's some incidents and write-ups about pushing back into a gas or a fueling truck or loader or whatever. So, I don't
know. Hey, Neil, this is Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck.
Just, there was an incident with an L-1011 in Atlanta. Is that they had not tried an L-1011 for a push, you know, pushing the plane back with the engines.
Yeah,
so,
power backs. Yeah.
Power backs. And so the pilots didn't want to do it. So the management got up in the airplane to do it. And they kept putting more power to the airplane. And, of course, the engines are low on in the ground. And there's windows on the bottom portion of the jetways or walkways. And then you got the walkway where the people are up on top of it. And by the time they got that L-1011 to move, they were somewhere up around 80% and the windows got blown out.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
so they stopped that.
Yeah, it reminded me of a Czech captain out in L.A. on an L-1011. Well, never mind. I'm not going to go there. But anyway.
One thing I was going to mention about that bird strike is it was interesting reading about that, given the fact that Sully had his incident on the Hudson. With the U.S. Airbus A320. So that was kind of curious. You know, since that was written, is there anything that they have done differently now to protect?
You know, Dorothy, when you were talking about the bird strikes and all, of course, my mind turned to Sully's incident on the Hudson. But I think it was pretty much the number of birds that actually entered the engines ingested more than the birds themselves, because I don't know if these bird guns or cannons, as they are called, How many do they shoot at one time?
One.
I don't know. One at
and
one time.
They weren't chicken size either. Those were what, like Canadian geese.
Yeah, these things
yeah.
were small Piper cubs.
Yeah, yeah, they were. They were huge.
I know at American we have a strict no flying through frozen chicken policy.
Good for you guys.
Well, you know, that was initiated by Kentucky Fried Chicken. You were giving them some competition.
That's it.
That little kerosene smell to it.
Now, but
yeah, there you go.
Has there anything been done since Sully's 8 year ago crash to protect against that? Or
good question.
Well, there's Chip could probably back me up on this more than I know about it because I didn't fly the airplane. But there's, I believe that there is a system on the Airbus that I forget the acronym for it, where if the computer detects a certain amount of damage to the engine, no matter what the captain does with the throttles, that the engine won't develop power because it says, whoa, hold it. If you do this, you're going to wreck the engine. So I'm not really certain that no matter whatever happened with Sully's flight, that there could have been any power that was developed on that engine. I forget the name of the system, but there's an abbreviation for it that's only on the A320 and the A321. Maybe
could that be
CAS
chicken avoidance system? No, that's avoidance system.
All the modern planes, even the 7-6 I'm flying now, have the EECS, electronic engine control.
Yeah, that's
and I remember after the Sully incident, there was a lot of discussion about just what you said, that those computers weren't going to allow you to produce any power anyway because of the damage that had been done, and there was old guys talking about the old JT8Ds. And the old engines, and had it done that, you know, they might have still been able to produce some power to get you back to a runway.
Yeah, and the only reason I knew about that was, you know, I've worked occasionally as an expert witness for a couple of aviation law firms, and what happened was about approximately 70 people who were on board that airplane wanted to file a lawsuit against Airbus and against U.S. Airways over what it, you know, winded up in the water or whatever. And one of the partners from the law firm that I work for asked me to investigate that to see if, in fact, there was a case. And I looked into it and discovered that system that was installed on the Airbus. And you know, I brought it to the I think it was called the Full Authority Digital Engine Control, FADEC, or something to that effect.
There you go. Yes, I think you're right on track.
Yeah.
Right. And so what happened was, you know, I brought this to the attention of the firm, and we all decided collectively, so, well, you know, look, a lawsuit is all well and good, but what are the damages? And there really were no damages, so they declined to take the suit. And, you know, a couple of the ambulance chasers went after a bunch of the people to bring a suit. But U.S. Airways, I think they gave each passenger $10,000 that was on that flight already. So, you know, there was really no sense in pursuing it. But I thought that was kind of interesting, you know.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Very interesting, yes.
Yeah.
My golly. Well, the only
predicated on it that you don't lose both engines at the same time.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure whatever the reason, it gave the computer greater authority over anything than even the captain of the flight, you know, as to what to do, because perhaps if Sully had been able to develop power on one of those engines, more power, perhaps he could have made it back to the airport, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Speaking of losing power, Chip, your dad, the three engines, you're talking about two-engine failure, three-engine failure on a big heavy jet. That was quite an accomplishment that those guys did accomplish in that landing.
Yeah, it's it was a pretty amazing story for sure.
Yeah. I've got one more comment about lightning testing. And it talks about how many bolts of lightning every day that aircraft go through. And we've seen videos on YouTube. I don't know if you guys have seen those videos. It looks like they're lighting up Frankenstein for return, you know, with the electricity going through both sides and the lightning hitting the airplane. And visually, these are actual videos of airplanes receiving lightning strikes. So they do absorb lightning, and we talk about the fuselages are very conductive. And I had the experience going into LaGuardia that night, of course, stormy night. I should prefix that with a dark, stormy night. Lightning everywhere going in, landing on 4, I think. We were on the ILS 4 at LaGuardia, L-1011, and lightning hit us on the nose about between the outer marker and the runway. We got a lightning strike. If you've been in an L-1011 cockpit, there are lots of lights. It looks like a Christmas tree with a double exposure, but all sorts of lights turned on at night. And the captain was flying. I was in the right seat, and I was looking out, and his head was inside flying the airplane until we came out of the clouds. But that one bolt of lightning that hit the nose radome of the L-1011 at low speed with the gear down, all flaps down, configured to land runway 4 at LaGuardia. And all the lights, electricity was bouncing around. You know Lockheed, it's an electrical airplane anyhow. And we landed the airplane, got it on the ground, and we were wondering just what the airplane, what happened to the airplane, you know, the lightning, how it was dissipated and so forth. So we had, of course, a lightning strike, a crew that came out with the cherry pickers and moved all over the airplane and looked at it. And sure enough, the airplane absorbed the lightning and went out the tail. Panels of the horizontal stabilizer in the aircraft on the back of the airplane, a small portion of them had been blown away where the electricity actually left the airplane. So lightning, it's amazing, but these airplanes are designed to absorb a lot of voltage and without frying everybody inside. And, of course, the beautiful thing that we see when we talk about lightning and electricity is what Chuck talked about earlier was St. Elmo's fire and how that displays itself in the cockpit at night when you have a lot of static electricity in the atmosphere and you're in clouds, and how it illuminates the windshields. And it would always amaze me when I had that displayed on the airplane. And I think all pilots, and Chip, I'm sure you go through that now on many occasions as you fly your routes.
Neil, one of the things that helps the airplane dissipate the electricity is the plane has on its wings and the stabilizer and the rudder area things called static wicks.
Yeah, yeah.
And they allow the electricity to leave the airplane into the atmosphere. And that's one of the things that helps the airplane survive these lightning strikes.
Well, you know, at low speed and almost to the runway, you get a lightning strike. And the thing that I remember the most is because the captain was flying and I was watching for the runway. When we came out of the clouds, I was going to say runway in sight. You know how that is supposed to happen. And I'm looking outside. Well, when the lightning hit the nose of the airplane, I was completely almost blinded. It's kind of like taking a photograph with a flash cube in a dark closet in front of your eyes. It makes the pupils very small. I think that's what it is, small. But the airplanes are indeed tested, and they do a fantastic job. The manufacturers do a fantastic job of testing these airplanes to the maximum, not to the minimum, but to the maximum, and probably beyond the maximum that they're tested. And so,
I don't know if it was this way at Eastern when you were having your recurrent training, your oral, but that was always the big gotcha was, okay, how many static wicks are on each wing, and how many do you need?
Very good, Jeff. You're right.
And I was like, I don't know. I'll have to look that up, Captain. Thank you.
Well, when did they turn from ropes or cloth static wicks to metal static wicks? Does anyone know that?
Oh, wow.
That's before my time.
Well, how about the propeller days? The propeller days, they had little cloth wicks at the end of the wings to absorb that and to run the electricity off the airplane. And then I think you probably remember the Pan American flight that actually blew up because of a lightning strike in the air off the coast of, golly, it must have been Maryland or Virginia, back in the 60s. And it was because of the fuel was not vented. They didn't really have static wicks, and they call them NASA wicks. I believe they were called NASA. I don't know what they're called today.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hopefully static wicks.
Static wicks. There you go.
Actually, you know, Neil, I started in 68 at Pan Am, and they told me to go out, and I started out as a cleaner, and they told me to go clean the 707. It was sitting out on the run-up area down there by where Pan Am used to be in Miami. And I get down there, and there's a whole bunch of people, fire trucks and all kind of management people. And here I come with my little wash truck, and I said, well, what's going on? I'm supposed to wash the airplane. And this crew chief says, you're not washing anything. I said, why not? He says, go look at the right wing. So I drove my little truck around. And from the outboard engine, which would be, the number four engine, to the end was gone. There was that part of the wing was gone. And what had happened was the lightning and it hit the empty gas tank. And, of course, an empty gas tank was something that didn't dissipate the electricity and blew the wing off.
Yeah.
Well, the guy, he still flew it into Miami.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, very good discussion we had tonight, guys. And gal. I appreciate your input and information that we talked about. It was really good. I thank you very much. And that part of our show is over, and we're almost out of time. But I want to talk to you about our listeners about the website that, if you haven't been there, you need to go to www.ealradioshow.com. You'll be entertained there as much as you're entertained here. And Dorothy has done a magnificent job since her recent appointment as the webmaster of the website. And golly, Pete, I didn't know we could improve what I had done over the 6 or 7 years now, I guess, we've been doing this thing. And the website's been out there 7 years. And boy, she has just absolutely revived this thing, given it life. And you can go to it and you can spend hours and hours at the website and know so much about so many different subjects, mostly, I'd say 99% related to aviation, and probably 85 to 90% related to Eastern Airlines. And she's done a magnificent job of this, and you need to really check it out if you haven't gone there. Dorothy, thank you so much. And do you have any comments about what you want to tell folks that they should visit when they go to weealradioshow.com?
Yes, I'd love to. Thanks, Neil, for the kind words. Well, we have breaking news on the front page that, as you can see, since last week, I've already updated with some new breaking news. And would like you folks to take a look every single week, go in and check it out and see what's new on the website. There's one on the website with 26 years since Eastern Airlines folded its wings, and there's a nice story in there. Just click on breaking news and we'll take you right to it. We also have a great story on there. It's a marvelous history of the FAA and aviation. And that is on their website, and I have a link that will take you right to it. It's a great-looking website, and you really need to check it out. They've done a marvelous job on that, for sure. We also have another one about Eastern Airlines Shuttle, which I didn't realize, about our now President Donald Trump, that he actually bought the Eastern Airlines Shuttle. I didn't know that. So we have a nice little story on that to let you know about it. And we also have put a couple of new things on there. We've got under the news where we have our newsletter and Reaper and Silverline and our error chapters. We also have one that is going to be for the Silver Liners, and we have an area that I created under the photo albums where we're inviting the Silver Liners to, if they're not a member, to join us and go in and put up their albums of their meetings that they have and lunches and affairs, and they can go in and create it and go in and look at all the others that are there as well. Please be mindful that the provider for the web's show is having difficulty with the photos that we already had in there. Some of the member photos aren't showing up, and some of the photos that are in the albums aren't showing up, and they are working on that as we speak. And so that'll be a couple of days before we finally see how that works out. So just give it a try. Come back later on and check it out. In the meantime, it is taking new photos being put in, so it has to do, I'm sure, with those that have been there and why they can't bring it up, we're not sure. But we have another addition to our tabs on the top, and you need to go through the tabs and check because they're a little bit different. They've been relocated here and there to make it more convenient and easier to find things. And we have one for Radio Latino. And we have some of the PowerPoint that Ray Alobert has been sending to us. And so go in and take a look around. And we enjoy all of you and your comments that you may have. You may send them to host@ealradioshow.com and let us know what you think or if we need to do something you'd like to see or if you have a change that you feel that we should make. Just write in and let us know. That's it. Back to you, Neil.
Well, you just started, Dorothy, about what you've done with this website. And I just want to remind folks that most of us have Facebook accounts, Twitter accounts, that type of media that we go to and we are on all the time. If you are on a Facebook account, and you're especially with a group like an airline group or an aviation or a company, you have you don't really have a focus or a what am I trying to put together here?
A place to go
a
to.
A body of information that it's just at random people put this, that, and the other on that on the Facebook. But here you can go in and you can look for Eastern history. You can look for some of the airlines that we've merged with, like Colonial and Caribair. You can look into that section of the website and find more information about that. One of the great things that that I see that we've done, or Dorothy has done, is to put this breaking news feature. And George Jen sent us a copy of this FAA. Boy, is that time to twinkle time? To...
No, that's my cell phone going off. I'm sorry, Neil,
okay.
I didn't shut it down.
Okay, that's all right. I like that background noise. Keep it going. But George Jen sent us a sent me a, and I think he sent it to everybody he knows, but I was so impressed with that, George, the FAA's great 25 years that they did. And we put that, Dorothy put that on the website. So you can go and click that on, and golly, Pete, I think you can stay in that one area of 25 years of the FAA's put together about aircraft accidents, hijacking, federal regulation changes, the history of FAA. Oh, it's just awesome. It's so
yeah, that
scary.
Was that was your, that was a great presentation.
Oh, that was
thanks,
great.
George, for sending it to me and
yeah,
then Dorothy putting
much.
It on the website. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful display of that. And we've
well,
got
we
so
also
many other
have
things.
On the, we do. We have our Captain Neil's interview with Captain Robert Wilbur that is wonderful to read because hearing it and reading it, it really makes you feel like you're right there in the cabin with him and listening
yeah.
to him and reading also about his background, which I didn't know much about. We also, I'd like to point out, too, that we have donations that can be made. Anything over $25 or more will entitle you to receive Neil's book, The Wings of Many. And we'd like to encourage people to do that. As you know, the website and the provider and all of the information, the radio show, that all costs a lot of money. So anything that we get in donations goes right back into the radio show. So keep that in mind. But there's many other things to see in there, and we'd like to encourage people to use it a little bit more often. And I'm sure you're going to love it once you get into it.
Back absolutely. And don't forget, Dorothy, that we encourage anyone that wants to put their own personal album on the website. It's there. It's available to you to create your own album. I've done that with little pictures, snapshots of here and there, and events that I've gone to, like Sun and Fun, and the people that I associated there, and the drinks that that I had at the bar, and so forth. All of these little pictures, they can go into your own personal album, and you can create your own right there. You don't have to send it to us. Create your own. Just go to the website and go under photo albums and put your own. We've got Bill Schultz, his son, did some. He was one of the first ones that posted an album about the Electra, and it's just a marvelous way of putting your stuff on the website, and it's there for others to see. And the videos alone, golly, I think we have probably 60, 75 videos, including Ray Valdez's video of going up to Mount Illimani. We've got many, many videos that are presented. Arthur Godfrey, and there's just so many I can't even think of them right now. But there's hours of entertainment just in the video area. It, as a matter of fact, Rickenbacker, when he received his Medal of Honor award when in World War One, is there's a video footage there that we've got in there. the demolition of the Atlanta, the old Atlanta airport terminal is there, implosion, I should say. So there's so much stuff to see there. We encourage you to visit the website, EALRadioshow.com. And we'd like to keep more coming to you. And like Dorothy says, it does cost a little bit of money. And we'd like to have anyone that wants to consider a donation, and any kind of donation, $2, $10, we have PayPal that will accept it, or either your Visa, MasterCard. And if it's 25 or more, we'll send you a copy of the Wings of Many, if you don't have that little book of lots of stories from the old days, from the male wings all the way up to the story of Steve Thompson's landing of that L-1011 in Miami. So we encourage
also,
you
ladies.
To... Yeah,
ladies,
oh, yeah, we've
there,
got some
Neil,
ladies.
I have created a section for recipes. I didn't forget about you. And I also have my chicken veal cacciatore recipe up there for anybody that's interested in trying it out. So you folks need to go in there. There's lots of good things.
Don't forget, we've
got
a web store. You can buy things there. And, golly,
what
lots of stuff
say,
there.
Don?
I was just going to say the chickens did not come from the chicken gun.
And I'm threatening Dorothy.
Yeah, that little kerosene flavor.
And I'm threatening Dorothy that I'm going to put in there, I'm going to send her my recipe for the Dollar Tree, a recipe of chicken fettuccine Alfredo. My favorite recipe. That's Dollar Tree. Everything that I put in there is from the Dollar Tree. So it can't cost you much more than a few dollars anyhow. But it's I have it often, and it's really, really good. I even take a little bit of that to my neighboring business here. I have a real estate company here in Ponte Vedra, and my neighbor is a liquor store, thank God. And we trade out.
Good thing they didn't throw that wild turkey in those engines.
Yeah, there you go. That's great. But, Dorothy, thank you so much for what you've done. And,
you're welcome, Neil.
You did so much for the EARA newspaper that I am so happy that you're able to dedicate some of your time now to our website. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, it comes a time that, folks, that we have to call it a night. And Captain Chuck, I guess you're the captain of this flight. How about putting the flight 302? Gently back
Miami
on the runway.
Miami Tower, this is Eastern 302 Heavy. We're just passing across Miami Beach shoreline in the newest jet aircraft of our fleet, our new Airbus A300-B4. And we're requesting a visual to runway 27 right. We've got the right runway in sight.
Roger, Eastern Flight 302 Heavy. This is Miami Tower. You're cleared to land on runway 27 right. The winds are light and variable from 280 degrees at 10 miles per hour, and the present temperature at the airport is 82 degrees. By the way, it's a beautiful aircraft, Eastern.
Roger. Thanks, Miami Tower. Eastern 302 Heavy is cleared to land on runway 27 right.
Local time is now 8:13 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and the temperature is 80 degrees. For your safety and comfort, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the captain turns off the fastened seatbelt sign. This will indicate that we have parked at the gate and that it is safe for you to move about. At this time, you may use your cellular phones if you wish. Cellular phones may only be used once the fasten seatbelt sign has been turned off. Please check around your seat for any personal belongings you may have brought on board with you, and please use caution when opening the overhead bins, as heavy articles may have shifted around during the flight. If you require a deplaning assistance, please remain in your seat until all other passengers have deplaned. One of our crew members will then be pleased to assist you. On behalf of Eastern Airlines and the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for joining us on this trip, and we are looking forward to seeing you on the board again in the near future. Have a nice day and stay in the Miami area or wherever your final destination takes you.
Chuck, will you take us out of here?
Mr. Producer, another outstanding job on the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we worked and the stories we share. We feel we truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. It is all because of you, our callers, listeners, guests, hosts, and sponsor, REPA, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us again on January 30th, 2017. We file our flight plan for a destination not yet determined. We hope you have a hearty and prosperous and happy time when we see you again. Until then, we all say, good night, Eastern. We love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern. We love you.
Good night, Eastern. We love you.
Dad says good night.